You are now listening to the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. For more information, visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts.
Thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann, and I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Go Mookie.
Go Mookie.
Yes.
We are recording on Wednesday night at almost 6 o'clock, and nothing has happened.
We're hoping it happens during our podcast.
It happened during our Hosmer happened during our just run-of-the-mill podcast two years ago, I guess.
So we can hope for another disaster.
Yeah.
with different results, I was about to say. I don't want to jinx it, so.
Well, yeah, that voice you heard is a very special guest. Hasn't been on the baseball podcast in a while, but Harold James Preller.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Gwintelligence, 100 episodes deep. Congratulations.
Fresh off that, where we got Marver to admit that he was wrong on something.
Yeah, that's great. It's an iconic episode. You know, Travis and I always say we don't really remember the names of podcasts until they get to episode 100, so welcome.
You made it.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to do a whole bit on the podcasts that we've left behind, like ones that have died on the vine.
There's some good ones that just couldn't keep it going.
Padres and IPAs.
Padres and IPAs.
Pod.
Yeah. Podspod, yeah. You know, I wish Hell's Bells would do more. They haven't really done one in a while, but you know, Bluntly Padres, we stop smoking weed, put out an episode.
Let's do it.
But you know,
I mean, there's so many. There's probably 20 defunct podcasts at this point, right?
It's a hard life. It's a hard life.
It seems like one of those things where it's so simple. We just sit around and record us talking and but. It's more than that, right?
It's hard to get motivation. Like, beyond 10, I think, is where that's where I start taking people seriously.
Yeah,
Up to 10, like, there's so many that have flamed out at, like, episode 3 or 4.
Well, the thing that keeps me going is the idea that maybe we could have a podcast week to week with a really good baseball team, and then our numbers would just explode. So that might happen. In our lifetime, in our podcast's lifetime. How do you guys feel about this? The Mookie Betts rumors are flowing. Do you feel like this is going to happen, HJ?
Deep down, no.
No.
It would be great. I'm very pro.
You're pro getting him for 1 year.
I'm pro dumping Will Myers. I'm pro getting Mookie Betts for 1 year. I mean, like, you look at the Vegas projections, right? And those aren't necessarily projections, but, like, they're right around 83, 84 wins, right? And I don't know how accurate that is, but you throw Mookie Betts into it, and you go from unlikely to likely, I think, for the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Dodgers are a big question here because the rumors are, whatever the rumors may be, that the Dodgers are also interested. And to break through that Dodger ceiling, playoffs, but if they get him, it feels much more daunting. And so are you thinking that, well, the Dodgers might get him for 1 year and then re-sign him? Or are we going to take this one little window of opportunity and think we have good enough pitching to actually make a run at this?
I think that's what you hope for, right?
Right.
I mean, the thing is, if the Dodgers get him, that's double bad because
Right. Not
only will they win more games, but you can assume that they will beat the Padres more and the Padres will win less games. Like that's a direct effect on the Padres' win total.
Right, especially with the amount of games we play.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're also in a position that is different than ours where, you know, we've heard this week where everybody's asking the question, are we a Mookie Betts away? Well, they might actually be a Mookie Betts away from winning the title. So it's a different situation for them. But how do you feel about that question? Like, should people be looking at it that way? If you get Mookie Betts for 1 year, is that going to take you over the hump? I mean, I don't like that way of thinking. I think you just get Mookie Betts for a year, figure it out later. But
I think I'm on that side. Like, what I do is I'll step back 2 years from today, right? And let's say 2 years ago you told me, hey, in 2 years from now, the Padres are going to have Manny Machado. They're going to have Tommy Pham. They're going to have Mookie Betts. And they're going to have a shortstop who is possibly the best shortstop in the league. Uh-huh. And then you told me, yeah, but they're just going to be in the mid-80s and wins. Like, I would have never believed that. And part of me is like, if they can't win with Manny Machado, Tatis, Pham, and Betts, like, what are we even doing here, right? Like, how are we going to build a lineup that can win the World Series if we can't do it with Mookie Betts, Pham, like, you know, this lineup that we have, like, with these superstars, a collection of superstars, like, that's legitimately three superstars in a lineup. That's incredibly rare, right? Yeah, I mean, even the Dodgers don't have three superstars in their lineup.
It alleviates pressure to fix other positions too, right? I mean, cause I mean, the catching situation becomes less problematic probably with having, you know, lack of offense there. It changes the game. I mean, it changes everything. But I mean, look at the deals that have been bandied out. Like, if you're thinking from the Red Sox side, like, okay, they like some of our prospects, some of our second tier prospects. I mean, does another major league team want to be involved with the Will Myers journey? I don't know if that's going to happen. Maybe that's what I'm attracted to more than just, I mean, Betts is going to be fun for a year, but just getting out of that.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of suspicious of all the rumors that have come out because they've all come from the Padres, right? The instances where we've heard players actually mentioned are all coming from the Padres side of the house. And for some reason on the Boston side of the house, we're not getting any reports of names that they want or that names that they're trying for.
They're just destroying Mookie Betts' reputation.
Yeah.
Mookie doesn't want to be
driving
here.
Driving his value down.
Yeah.
Man, they sure hate Mookie Betts.
Yeah, that selfish
how
MVP
quickly that turned.
He has no personality at all. He doesn't talk. He plays. Yeah, but yeah, I think you're right. And that brings us, you know, to ask the real question, like, is there a benefit for them to have this kind of week where not a lot's going on, but they need something to kind of be going on? And then, you know, we're all on Twitter looking at it and freaking out and thinking about, you know, whether or not this could actually happen. We've talked about this almost every offseason. Like, is there a tangible benefit for them just to have a media cycle like this?
Like marketing through MLB trade rumors.
Yeah.
Like,
and then,
I think they do. What's the downside, right?
There's no doubt. Yeah, I guess people getting upset that it didn't happen and being frustrated with.
But you know as well as I do that the second this trade falls through, if it does fall through, it's just going to be full speed ahead on, you know, we decided that we've got the prospects to win this thing. We just got to. Oh, we got to work through the process.
Let's take a bet, like a bet. But how long do you think when this falls through? How many days do you think it'll be before the first piece about Will Myers' new approach? He's got a
new motivation,
new professional attitude. He's coming to camp and he's not playing around anymore. You know, we're getting that 2 days later. I think
AC's already written it.
He's got a file.
He's got it in the can. Yeah.
I think that's what ends up happening, right? I mean, we'll have a conversation about whether or not Will Myers can Will Myers come back after being, you know, tossed out in trade rumors like that anymore. I mean, we remember the end of the season. It felt like he wasn't coming back. I mean, Ron was saying things, implying things, and he seemed pretty aloof and kind of standoff. I don't know if standoffish is the right word, but it just seemed like it was impossible for him to come back.
Yeah.
But
they tried last year to trade him. Like,
I know.
Like, that wasn't a well-kept secret. Like, they tried really hard to trade him last offseason and failed.
Yeah.
I don't know. This whole thing, the cost that they're talking about, which is, like, what are the rumors? It's, like, Lucchese, Margot, Campusano, and, like, maybe Arias?
Yeah.
And then Will and some money, right?
And the only thing, I don't know who reported, but we've heard that they're interested in Patino, and that seems to be like a third rail for most of the fan base. Like, they don't want to.
Well, and weren't there a couple off limits from the Padres side, too?
Yeah.
Gore and Patino and J.J. Abrams, which
J.J.
was.
J.J. Abrams, yeah.
seemed a little surprising. Like, why him? Like, I said, get Gore and Patino, but.
I mean, I have the. Because Abrams is ridiculous, because he's better than Patino, I think,
yeah.
But.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, this whole thing, that's the price I thought it would cost just to give Will away, which I've advocated for. Just pay the prospects and make his contract go away in full, right?
Right.
And now we're hearing what I thought it would cost just to get rid of Will, but we get Mookie for a year on top of that. Like, that, to me, that's incredible, because I was already preparing in my head, just get rid of these guys and make Will go away. So,
yeah. And but do you think they're prepared if they could get off of Will and then just live with the idea that Mookie would only be here for a year, they would have a certain, they would have a fair amount of money left over next year.
Yeah, like, I keep hearing, like, well, we got to think about the future also, right? But clearing up $20 million for the next two off seasons is a huge deal.
Big deal.
Because the thing about...
That's thinking about the future.
Yeah, yeah. And the difference between prospects and money for available to spend is that money is a lot more flexible. Like, if Pham gets hurt, like, if there's some injury and some player is going to miss the next season, right? It's a lot easier to just go on the market and buy a replacement than it is to already have a prospect stocked, ready to go, that's going to match the performance, right? It takes a lot of luck to have that ready to go. Yeah. But, like, you have $20 million, then you go out and buy the best free agent you can get that can fill whatever need arises in the future, because it's impossible to fully predict what that need is going to be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look at the way, if nothing happens, and this is basically the team they're going into the spring training with, to me it feels like they're shooting for like an 80-win team, 81, 82. I mean, that's what they're projected as, basically, assuming they have health. Do you think that that's going to just, if they hit that, there's going to be a huge parade of patting themselves on the back about how they, there's improvement. We got improved. Jace Tingler changed the culture. We're not a losing baseball team anymore. Or, you know, we've shown that there's progress happening, and, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. Like, I feel like there's going to be a huge victory lap if they just get to 500.
Sure, yeah.
And it seems like that's what they're going for. And the bigger question for me is there a way to be a 500 team but less annoying? Like, Hunter Renfro is a is Hunter Renfro a frustrating baseball player compared to Tommy Pham? Is Profar, he's more polished than Luis Urias, I guess, you know, and then you have a strengthened bullpen, so you're not blowing games late. Could they just be marginally better, a little bit better? I mean, yeah, 10 wins or so is not nothing, but could they be 500, be less frustrating, and then finish the next season with this victory lap of, see, the culture has to change, you know, and we're just building something. We're not rebuilding, we're building, you know?
I mean, of course that's what the team will say, right?
I mean, yeah.
Presumably the team is setting the bar really low, because every AC article says that Fowler is demanding that they are better than last year. Right. Well, last year was horrendous. Like, yeah, it better be better than last year. That's not that hard,
right?
Yeah.
I still can't get it. I mean, the fact that he did that at the social summit and acted like, you know, heads were going to roll and everything, and he was doing this public performance, and then they have the uniform reveal, and then they hire Tingler, the uniform reveal, and then they do the Pham trade. And I don't know. It feels calculated the way that they'll have Ron Fowler come out and be like the bad cop who's not taking this anymore. And then they'll have Peter come on the radio, who's like an old boomer who vapes or something like that. You know, he's like the cool guy, older guy who just wants to enjoy
spend
baseball.
All his money. Yeah. Yeah.
And he comes on like the nice parent and talks to Darren about it. Like,
he's the sensible one.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, hey, you know, we love AJ. It's not a big deal. Like, we thought AJ was in trouble.
Yeah.
Going in before the uniform reveal, and they hit a home run on that as far as the public is concerned. Like, I think there's something about that. I don't think it's an accident. I think they just do that. I don't know.
Totally.
I mean, it works, right?
It does.
We're
it
all taking the bait.
We are. I know.
Yeah, going back to when you said earlier, what's the downside to them promoting these rumors? And that was the first time I really thought about it, because for me, of course, the downside is, again, my disappointment and going into the season with this, oh, what could have been mentality, not necessarily. But I understand that our circle is very small, you know, like the diehard fans that are really into this, where the majority of even season ticket holders don't. They're like, Tingler who? Like, Betts, right? He's a good player, I've heard. Like, probably don't know what team he's on.
Yeah.
that's the majority of who they're marketing to. And so those rumors that they were in play are the only really downside is a small group of us.
I think there's a lot of fans that are like, well, I really appreciate that they tried.
That's going to happen.
There's so many people that just want to see trying. Right. I think.
I'm glad I had an organization that went after Mookie Betts.
I mean, this is a fan base that celebrates when Baseball Tonight comes to our spring training. Like, the bar is really low with us on what we appreciate. Like,
yeah. I mean, could you see, like, with this roster, is there any chance of, you know, going further than like the 80 win threshold? I mean,
them surprising
sure,
us.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that Mackenzie Gore could have an impact next year with Paddock progressing? And, you know,
I think sure there's a chance of that. I see it more like there's a lot of room for growth internally. Like we already have, right? And really just two players, Machado and Tatis. Like Tatis is like, I hate doing this where you just multiply out what his stats were times however games he didn't play. But, like, he's like a 7 or 8 war player, right? Mm. And he just needs those at-bats. And then Machado, like, has set up, you know, there's a historical record that he's a 5 or 6 war player, which is much better than he was last year. Like, there's a lot of room for internal growth that kind of boosts the team back to where, I mean, the projections last year said they were a 500 team. And they greatly underperformed. Like, your example of them finishing at 500, that's just getting back to zero, really, because that's what they were already projected for. But, like, the difference between what they did last year and that projection is a lot of Manny and internal underperformance from players that are still on this roster.
Yeah.
I mean, and so for me, I think it's a lot more likely that those players play up to what they've done in the past than, you know, a dark horse coming up from the minor leagues and carrying the team.
Right. Well, I mean, it does seem like they did want to strengthen the bullpen pretty a lot. It's like, do you think that'll be helpful for like a younger starting staff? I mean, it seems like that's a way to go. They've invested so much money in it. I mean, that also could blow up in their face, I guess. Like,
I mean, there's a lot of examples of Super Bowl pens blowing up. It's so hard to predict. So, I mean, I agree on paper, they look good, right? I mean, we saw them last year. The players were good. But I've also seen, like, I remember thinking that Clay Meredith was, like, unhittable. And then things just kind of disappear after a while, right? And I can't explain why. It just happens. Like, Rod Beck, like,
yeah,
he was amazing. He was the world's best closer for 1 year. And then, you know, it just disappears. Mm. It's so hard to predict.
Right, and some of those additions are older players that we're hoping are coming back or find their former glory. But
right. I mean, Munoz throws really hard. What if he loses control? You know, right. Stuff like this happens. I have no reason to believe that'll happen to Munoz, but it happens like across the board, across Major League Baseball, where guys that were outstanding 1 year are poor the next year. Like they miss something.
Yeah.
But I mean, on paper, yeah, they look great.
Yeah, the bullpen looks
real
good
sexy
on paper.
Yeah.
Are you gonna go to a lot of games this year? Do you think that it's
same as always?
Same as always, just by yourself, tweeting.
By myself, yeah.
No, I just wonder. I wonder how I was at Fan Fest this year, and it just felt like everybody was kind of going through the motions again. And it's like, well, this is what we do at this time of year.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it does go badly. Like, I don't know. Do you think you'll be as engaged, or do you think you'll check out at a certain time in the season?
I don't know. I'm easy to please. Like, I watch the games no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, at least on TV. Like, I never really fully check out.
Right.
I don't know about you guys, but, like, I mean, Travis, you have season tickets, so
yes.
You know, you're bound to go to some number of games probably, right?
Yeah. I get a 40-game package, but I at least go to about 20 of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're hardcore fans.
Right.
Yeah. But I think they've so insulated themselves from needing to be good. Like, it's just a night out on Saturdays for people across the county, right?
Right. Well, and that's the thing is, like, I miss baseball so much right now that I feel like regardless of how good they do, I'm going to love that baseball's back. But there's also the thing with, like, I noticed at FanFest, too, and bringing back the Brown and all that. There's only so far, like, a promotional, like, thing can go. It feels really good that the Brown is back, but it's not enough. You know what I mean? The only thing that can really get that buzz back is if they start winning. Going beyond those that just love baseball and watching it.
Right. I mean, there's some things that, like, and maybe I'm desensitized to it because I and probably we all go to so many games, but right. like things like Hodad's and the food there, I can acknowledge it's good for the average person, but I'm not interested in it anymore. Like,
right.
I don't even eat at the ballpark at this point. I don't want a Hodad's burger. I don't want Phil's. I don't want anything they have there,
right.
really.
Right.
So to me, the draw is no longer. And there was a time where I could be sold personally, like, well, we'll go, we'll get some food and just enjoy the time, even though we right. have to watch this awful
the
team.
Park at the park experience.
Yeah, and yeah. I wonder how much, like, Joe Fan is kind of in the same position where they've seen the fills, they've seen the stuff out there. Like, craft beer is everywhere. I don't need to go to the ballpark anymore. Like, Denny's has craft beer.
Yeah.
So
right.
I part of me wonders, like, does Joe casual fan, what's the draw still? Maybe they are drawn. I don't know. But for me, it's a lot less.
Right. And I don't think it's enough. Like I was saying, those promotional, oh, we have the best pizza and the best ballpark and the best whatever. That's good for one or two games to the casual fan. Maybe it's not enough to make it work for the whole season. And I really feel like this city, you can see it now with San Diego State and the way that this basketball team is. Like, the games are exciting. Like, you want to go to that. Tickets are now hard to get a hold of compared to.
Oh, no, it'll happen.
And winning is the thing that does that.
Right.
So, speaking of, they're playing tonight, correct?
Yeah.
22 in a row.
Well, so the biggest change from last year is probably Jace Tingler. And, you know, how long do you think it's going to take for people to overreact to him? I feel like it's going to
turn on
Tingler. I've turned on Tingler. Maybe he's just I mean, we spent so long over the Bud Black era and the Andy Green era evaluating lineups. And I wonder how long he's going to have. Like, are people going to just be at his throat?
I think it's going to be short.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he already said, like, he made some ill-advised comments early on, like where he basically acknowledged, you know, I'm going to make a ton of mistakes. That's not what I want to hear, because we were told that this is we're going to the playoffs this year, is what we were told. So
the imagination comment or whatever that was.
Right.
Like, yeah.
I mean, winning a wild card is really difficult, right? There's so many teams that are competing for it, and I hate to say it, but like sometimes one game matters, right? And if he blows one game and you're like, he shrugs and he's like, it's my first day.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I get it, but like, you promised me something and you're not delivering it now. So,
well, it makes me wonder because, you know, like we all got annoyed with Andy Green towards the end and he didn't say anything, but he also, like, he didn't, from their perspective, I think they liked him more than they let on. I think he didn't really get into trouble that much in press conferences. I know you and Corey like to watch those and everything.
Love, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, but he didn't, like, he didn't screw up a lot.
No, and that was the draw for the Padres, right? Because they want vanilla, not saying anything, team-approved messaging. I mean, Buck Showalter was, like, the last thing they wanted there, right? Because he's a grizzled veteran that was going to say his piece. And
right.
They have a guy now who we have to assume is similar to Andy, right? That's going to toe the party line and probably not say that much. And
he does have an aw shucks like attitude.
Didn't you think it was a big enough of a PR move? It seems confusing if they're looking for the Andy 2.0 version. So to me, it's like, well, we don't have anything to go on really with this guy. So the first time he like goes to argue with a ump or I'm curious to see how he handles all these situations now.
I mean,
I think he's got like a week or two a month with the lineup before we start questioning how he's doing things and why are you changing it every day or being stubbornly consistent in something that's not working or
well,
I don't know.
If somebody
but,
throws at Tatis, he has to throw back. I think that's without
goes I think
without
there's going to be
well,
there's
and how does he
tests,
defend the
right?
players,
or,
right?
Will there be tests? Will there be
for
will
a lot of first times?
Will he have an awareness of the landmines that Andy didn't sidestep, and will he react to those? I mean, maybe if he's smart, he probably will. I don't know.
I mean, you guys know the fan base, right? Like, there's a few things after the Green era that I think we all want to see, right? Defending a player.
Yes.
I don't know. Do we all want a fiery argument with an umpire? Like,
do I?
Yeah.
Yes, very much
right.
so.
We want to see a little fire because Andy didn't have any fire.
Right. And when he did, it felt contrived, like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do now. It wasn't ever like instinctual.
He was playing a role. He wasn't actually upset about it, right? Exactly.
And the fire that we thought he had was probably just a reflection of the era that we're living in where it can be memed and stuff like that. I don't know how many times he actually blew up, you know.
Pretty rarely.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what are the key moments of that green era, right? Like, not defending Hedges.
Getting shoved against, by Dave
against
Roberts.
Against Rizzo. Yeah, getting shoved by Dave Roberts. And then the whole Kinsler incident where there was confusion on whether he said it or – like, he basically threw Kinsler under the bus and said he said it after Kinsler denied it and then ignored it all and then started him the next day. Like, these are the three incidents I think of when I think of Andy Green.
Oh, yeah, and Jose Perella for a summer.
Yes, yes. Marver would be very interested in you bringing that up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. I think that he seems like a guy who has read a bunch of books about leadership, and he...
But that's what we thought about Andy Green.
I know, but he's going to, like...
Andy Green was the who moved my cheese.
He's going, like, to quote some dumb shit, like, on the microphone. That's what's going to happen.
But we've heard little grumblings about how much of a stickler Andy was and wasn't very flexible and not really a personable guy. Like, some of the rules got to be bent sometimes. It's just how it is.
But let's not forget, what I'm going to be watching for is the team, like the media, like Jesse Agler, Mudcat, Don Ercillo, people that have a platform to talk about him, to sell him. Remember the first part of Andy Green era? They thought he was special.
He won the interview.
Right.
They love talking about how this is a different guy. This guy's
I think they're going to play up the cool dad aspect of him. Like, he's in the weight room with the guys. Like, he's just one of the guys.
Yes.
Like, and I mean, Andy clearly wasn't one of the guys, right? Like, the team, Hosmer wasn't inviting him out for steaks after the game. You could see them, Jace trying to elbow his way in, right? Into team dinners and hanging out.
You guys want to play 2K?
So, playing Truth or Dare in the hotel room. Yeah.
So maybe he toes the party line in that regard, but he's better with the guys.
Yeah, like, he's at home right now reading online Fortnite strategies.
So yeah,
he
can hold
his own with the guys.
Can you relate to that? Yeah.
I wonder if somebody's going to say, you know, well, he comes from development. But, you know, superstars, they're always developing. It's like you hear people – I heard people always say, like, you know, Denzel Washington still goes to acting classes. Manny Machado's still developing. Oh, it's going to be fun. I think he's going to have 2 weeks of weird lineups and people are going to be at his throats so
fast. You think
fast.
2 weeks?
Unless they start hot. I mean, if they start
hot, that's the other thing. Yeah.
It's going to be Tingler mania. But.
Not like the old Andy Green era that started with a shotgun to the stomach.
Yeah. But there's not going to be a whole year, though, where we're accepting of it and we're like, you know, they're just learning his system. And the thing with managers is it doesn't take – if you look at other examples, like, plenty of teams have won the first year of a manager's tenure. So now that we're supposed to be a playoff team, like, there's no wiggle room here. Like,
this
has got to click quick.
Yeah.
And hopefully – I think rightfully so. If it does go bad, hopefully it goes – the ire goes towards AJ, right? I mean, doesn't it go up the line a little bit here now? This is his choice.
If he fails, this is all on AJ. Because the perception is he's just AJ's pal.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
And, yeah.
What are his qualifications besides that?
Could you imagine if Profar, like, just is a disaster and Tingler's a disaster? I mean, that...
And Hosmer keeps hitting ground balls and Myers does nothing. With a consistent position. Yeah, all that would be
a
nightmare.
It could happen. It
could happen.
But I'm hoping for Myers greatly improving with consistency and Green off his back. Maybe there's something there. Maybe Hosmer can still hit a line drive.
Maybe.
Maybe. That's still there. And then, like you said, with Machado and Tatis, there's so much upside there that, I don't know, there's hope still.
So, like, last thing on Tingler. So he was known for his ping pong tournament in spring training, and then they had that Connect Four basketball thing last year. Do you guys have predictions on what the big premier thing by Tingler's going to be?
Team builder side game is going to be? Yeah.
Well, like, he might, I mean, like, he'll probably, if he's smart and he's, you know, he wants to relate to the modern athlete, maybe he does like a trash can basketball as a tribute to Kobe. I think that'd be very timely. I don't know.
Like Street Fighter 2 tournament?
Street Fighter
like
2
tournament? Wheel the cabinet into the clubhouse? He's into jiu-jitsu, right? So,
oh, that's going to be... Oh, man. I can see the Padres POV. I can see it. I can... Tingler, after games.
He's in the jiu-jitsu studio doing his moves.
After games, man, I just got to roll.
They do like a segment where like whoever's youngest on the team is like, so like how's this thing work? Is there motion controls or something? Like I punch in the air and like the guy does it? Like he's like, what's this joystick thing?
Yeah. Oh, man. I forgot about the jiu-jitsu thing.
I think you should go totally different and try like a game. Like one of those team building games, I'm sure they probably already do this. We just don't know. But have you know that one called like Celebrity or whatever? Have you heard of this?
No.
I can't really explain the whole game, but I had to be involved with it with a bunch of theater friends.
This is like
friends.
A corporate retreat type of thing.
Yeah, but with theater people, so it's different. And I highly recommend Tingler looking up the game Celebrity and, you know, putting the guys through that. I think that would be great camaraderie builder for spring training. Yeah.
Yeah. So as good of a segment as Street Fighter 2 would be for POV, that sounds like it would be a terrible segment for POV, right?
No. Well, maybe it involves charades and other things with that. So
what if he just organizes pickle games, intense
pickle
tournaments. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, he's gonna
butts up tournaments.
I would tune in for that. Yeah, I would very much like to see a butts up tournament, to be honest.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite times is a kid, right?
That
there,
or elementary school handball with full rules. Rainbows, slicers, yes. Sliders. Yeah.
Tingler's tetherball tournament for the Madres.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. Well, hey, HJ, thanks for coming on. You're always a great person to talk to about Padres. And check out the Gwintelligence podcast if you guys do one ever. Again, 100 and out. Is that the?
Yeah, that's when you just turn in, right?
Yeah, yeah. But you guys do a great podcast, and everybody needs it. So keep doing it.
Yeah, we need the content.
I know. And yeah, you can check out Seal City SD, our other thing that we do.
It's great. Number one lacrosse podcast in the world.
All righty. Well, follow HJ Preller on Twitter at HJ Preller, and we'll see you sometime this season, hopefully.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to call somebody who went to the Padres fantasy camp. His name's...
Steve Woods?
No, yeah.
Oh, Paul Reindel?
Couldn't get him.
Oh.
We're going to call at Chill Myers. His name's John Hoover. So he went to he was there all week. So we're going to get stories about Paul and Woods. So let's call him. All right.
I love the colorful clothes you wear. And the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. I hear the sound of a gentle wind on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the...
All right, we're back on the line with John Hoover at Chill Myers. That's 1L. On Chill Myers on Twitter. John just got back from Padres fantasy camp, and it was a real content factory. We all kind of were watching your guys' week going on. How was it, John?
I don't want to undersell it like at all, because it was like the most amazing sports experience of my life, and I've had a lot of cool sports experiences in the past, but like by far, like the access to all of the Padres, you know, the clubhouse, the minor leaguers that were there, the major leaguers that were there. Like it was the coolest, like if you're a Padres fan, it's absolutely the coolest experience that you could possibly imagine.
Yeah. So, I mean, we saw in the article that Padres Geekster wrote up about it. You said that you put on your life savings into it. How much does it cost to do this? I just...
So like in total, it kind of depends. If you've got a buddy to go with it, it's going to cost a little bit less because you're not going to be in like a single room. But it's probably right around $5,000. That's like flights included. But I mean, I swear, like I could have paid double and still been fine with it. Like it was worth double. How about that? I mean,
yeah.
that the experiences alone, like the first night was unbelievable. So yeah, it's right around $5,000 if you, you know, everything included. And then what's the cool part about that is a majority of it goes to the Padres Foundation.
Oh, cool.
So it's, I mean, if you're into that, it's like a tax write off, but, but yeah, it's totally worth it.
So you get there on the first night and, you know, do you go straight to your locker and you see the uniforms that they've made for you and everything, or is that the next day?
Yeah, so I kind of got in a little bit late. I've got a wife and kid at home, and I kind of wanted to spend as much time with them as I could before I left for a week. So I kind of got in a little bit late. I got there around 5 o'clock, checked into the hotel, and then there was like a social happy hour to where you got to talk to the campers. You got to meet some of the coaches. Randy Jones was there. So I went straight over. It was just across the street at a local bar that we kind of just hung out for a little bit and got to chat and got to know each other. There's a lot of returning campers. So I was one of the rookies that was kind of, I didn't really know anybody going into it. So I was kind of hesitant, had a couple beers and got a little bit more confident to talk to people. But yeah, it was a great setup, starting off, and had some good conversation. And then, like you said, like the following day, got in early and checked out everything and saw my name on the back of a jersey and was like floored. I was so excited about it. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. The pictures look amazing. I mean, so you're in there. Is there a pretty strong competitive atmosphere there? I mean, you basically have to show your skills for the first part, right, before you get drafted, correct?
Yeah, and it ranges. The whole camp ranges in abilities. I mean, we had a 78-year-old father of one of the sons who's a returning camper. So like a 78-year-old guy who had played professional baseball in a Mexican league, all the way down to, I think I was one of the youngest guys there. So it ranges in, you know, there's a wide range of skill. So basically the first day you kind of go run through some drills and the coaches get to see you do outfield, you do infield, you do, you know, hitting off of a machine. That way they can kind of evaluate your talent. And then there's a draft later that night to where, we had 36 guys there. So there was three teams of 12, which turned out to be actually pretty cool. But yeah, I wish we had. 48 guys to where we could do four teams of 12, but yeah.
So did you, I should ask first, do you play baseball regularly or were you ready to go? Did you have to do like warmups and, you know, get your arm in shape and remember how to swing before you went to camp?
Yeah. So my background in baseball was Little League. And then I played until about eighth grade. And then I took a hiatus and started surfing competitively. My passion is surfing in the ocean. And then after that, 5 years ago, I had a buddy call me and said, "Hey, you gotta join our, adult baseball league." And so I've been playing, Twilight League, which is San Diego Adult Baseball League. It runs like May through August. So I'm only getting, 10 games. So I haven't played a baseball game since August, but, I mean, I've kind of been keeping up with it. So I'm relatively in shape and like to think I'm okay at baseball, but I definitely wasn't ready for a week long of baseball. That's for sure.
Yeah. I would love to go more than anything, but I would fear getting there and the second day in just being so sore, having blown my arm out and something else that it'd ruin it for me. I'd have to get in like shape the year before. Cause I played in high school or whatever, but not since. So,
yeah, it's funny. There was a guy there who had never played baseball in his life, never thrown a ball, never swung a bat. And wow. He was kind of he's like, "Oh yeah, I went to the cages, a couple months in the past, but that's my only exposure to baseball. I love the Padres. I love, everything about it." And so, I mean, if you're worried about, showing up out of shape, everybody's right. Pretty much showing up out of shape anyway.
The bell is very wide on this curve, huh?
Exactly. Yeah.
So you get drafted by the Wally Joyner and Andy Ashby team. Now, you're a lifelong Padres fan, and I mean, Wally Joyner is a legend of the game, but, you know, he wasn't a Padre for that long. But, I mean, Andy Ashby is, I think, probably underappreciated in the greater Padres universe. Like, he seems like he should be around more.
Well, they were both part of the 98 team,
yeah, they were.
Right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's their legends. I mean, so that whole team is.
So what were they? What were they like swinging. As? What were they like as leaders?
I tell you what. So, you know, backtracking a little bit. 98, I was playing Little League, and we won like the San Diego. It was TOC, Tournament of Champions, back then, right? And so 98, we won the Tournament of Champions as a, you know, in minors. I was part of the A's. And that's when I fell in love with baseball, because, you know, we were on a hot run, and then the Padres went on their hot run. And so, you know, we were watching them. So these are the guys that I idolized growing up. It was like Andy Ashby and Wally Joyner, Tony Gwynn, Trevor Hoffman, all those guys, you know. And so it was really cool. I got to talk to Andy Ashby right at the end, saying, hey, your team is the reason why I fell in love with baseball. And he was really, really appreciative of it. You could tell it meant a lot to him. But him as a coach, as a leader, he left that up to Wally Joyner.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
And Wally, I mean, are they just telling you stories and after the games, just how much time are you spending talking to them before and after the games?
I'm in their ear every single chance I can get, because like I said, these guys were my heroes growing up. So I'm asking Wally, you know, what his favorite park to hit in, who is his favorite pitcher to hit against, and you know, he's telling me I think he went 22 for 44 at Coors Field. I asked him about facing Randy Johnson, and he said that slider starts behind me as a left-handed hitter. And some of the story, but the access to all the stories is, hey, Wally, tell me a story about, you know, player X or whatever. And they're more than willing to just chat with you. And so the cool thing, Tuesday night is, it was take your coach out to dinner night. And so we got to hear some of the most ridiculous, funny stories possible with the 98 team, with Kevin Brown, with Ken Caminiti, with Tony, with Trevor, with everybody involved. And that was definitely the coolest part about it.
We love a Kevin Brown story. So if you're willing to share, what's the best Kevin Brown story you heard?
Yeah. So I don't think I'm going to get in too much trouble telling the story, but it was the one that stuck out to me the most. Andy Ashby actually told it, because Wally was part of it, but Andy was sharing with us. They were on the road somewhere. I think it was Wrigley. They were saying it was kind of, maybe it was Montreal or somewhere, but Kevin Brown had, they always called him Always Mad. He was just always mad. He was always pissed off. And so he had a bad outing at one point, and went back after his start. He got pulled early. I think it was after four or five innings or something like that. And he got pulled early and went into the visitor's locker room and essentially just dismantled every part of the bathroom in there. And so they called him, you know, he was a rage monster back then. And so all the doors, all the stalls are broken apart. And he's like, guys, you got to go see what Brownie did. You got to go see what Brownie did. And so all the guys are starting to file in, you know, towards the later part of the game. And all the doors are ripped off. All the stalls are dismantled. And there's Wally Joyner sitting on the toilet with a newspaper, buck naked, as the guys are passing by. As the guys are passing by. And he goes, hey, what are you guys doing in here?
That's great.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, I mean, the access, I mean, you're playing a game, or how many games are you playing every day?
So, we have three teams one team had a doubleheader each day. We got rained out on Tuesday, so we only got a morning game, and that was our doubleheader day. So there's a 9:30 game and a 1:30 game. And, it's one to two games a day, just depending on which team you're playing. And it was great. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, so you're there at the complex and you're seeing current players on the roster, you know, in the lunchroom and kind of working out. I mean, who'd you end up seeing?
So I spent a lot of time kind of just walking around the whole complex, and I got access the first day I showed up, and Josh Naylor, Matt Strom, Tucupita Marcano, Gabriel Arias, Anderson Espinoza were there. They're all sitting at this breakfast table. I walk in and I'm grabbing eggs and bacon, and these guys are sitting here, and I'm just like, this is unreal. Like, these are some of our best minor leaguers, some of our good major leaguers, and I'm sitting at a table watching them eat and watching Matt Strom talk to some of the young guys, and it was just a surreal experience.
Yeah. And are they just looking at you like, oh, you're part of the camp? Or no, I'm just kidding.
You know what's funny is all of the guys were super open. Coaches, analytics guys. I sat next to Jace Tingler and watched Josh Naylor and Gabriel Arias take BP in the cages. And you know, you kind of want to be mindful. You don't want to, you know, meddle in any of their business and don't want to get in the way. So we're kind of just sitting out of the way. But everybody was so open, so, you know, welcoming of all of us. Everybody just had a smile on their face. Everybody was super, super awesome. That was the coolest part.
Yeah.
So after hanging with Tingler, have the Padres made the right decision?
I'm going to say the work that I saw him, Damian Easley, I think he was pitching to Naylor, and the work that I saw him, the detail work, plate discipline with Naylor, the bullpen with Strom, I'm super encouraged with his fundamental coaching skills. That's for sure.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's going to be a big year for him. But some of the people that were there, Stephen Woods was there. Did you guys have some dust ups on the field or anything go on?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I've shared a soccer field with him, and I would consider him to be a dirty soccer player, but
a monster.
Yeah.
a bull in a china shop. Yeah. Yeah, there was an incident day one. Like I said, we got rained out that afternoon game. So it was a little wet, but, he was on the mound. He was struggling. And I came up in the second inning, and he said he threw me a cutter that didn't cut. Excuse me.
That's good.
A cutter that didn't cut hit me right on my left hip. And I took it like a champ. He was apologetic, but I knew it was kind of a dust back pitch.
It was a message.
Yeah. Well, it was a message for sure.
Well, hey, you know, You gotta stick up for yourself. Hopefully, yeah.
Taking up space in Wood's head, you know. What can
did
you do?
Did Wally call for a retaliation, or
we definitely got him later in the week. Wally had a prior commitment that he had to leave on Thursday morning, so we got Trevor Hoffman as our secondary backup coach, and
nice.
He was coaching first base and got in Woozy's head pretty good and induced six straight walks. So that was, he was definitely the catalyst of the Bad Ashes first win.
Well, cool, man. Hey, it sounds like a really, really fun week. We just wanted to have you on to tell a few stories about it. That sounds awesome. Like are you going to run it back next year, or maybe wait a couple?
I'd like to. I may have a gap year or two, because I spent all my husband and father credits that I had on this week.
Yeah.
So
that's what I was going to ask. I want to have pointers from you on the pitch to your wife to get, you know, not that you need permission to do things, but how you worked it out so that, you know, the wife and kids were taken care of where you could do this.
I started a year in advance. So I heard Woodsy and Paul last year on the radio talking about it. And I gave her a heads up a year in advance. So I've been working on it for a year, and I promised her a nice week long trip, and sent her some flowers and stuff while I was there. So I schmoozed it a little bit. Yeah.
All right. Well, now you can put her on the phone and we can hear her side of that.
Right.
I'm just kidding. So hey,
I'd rather not.
I know it's good. So John, before we get out of here, everybody's talking about it. You know, glad to have you on the Faith Podcast. What? Let's talk about it. Do you think the Padres are going to get Mookie Betts?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot of there's smoke, there's fire, I guess. But it depends on what the other teams have to offer. If the Dodgers can make it less sticky with the Will Myers contract, then that might be the route that the Red Sox go. I mean, this isn't a free agency where we're waiting on the player to decide. It's kind of more what the teams value more. So if the Dodgers can offer something more, something better than the Padres. But I have a feeling that the Padres can work it out. I'd love to see Mookie Betts for a year at Petco Park and Brown. That would be great. But I'm not hanging my hat on it. I'm not, you know, waiting on pins and needles here.
What's just I got to ask because of your Twitter handle at Chill Myers. What's your relationship with Will Myers? Has it just devolved into you ready for him to leave? Were you a stan earlier?
No, after going through this fantasy camp, I respect any major leaguer like 100-fold more than I did. It's kind of a funny story. The reason the handle came up, we were me and some friends were at Bubs after a game, and Will Myers rolls up on a skateboard with a backwards hat and grabs some to-go wings or something, and I was like, oh hey, there goes Will Myers, and my friend's like, no. Oh. There goes Chill Myers, and so I kind of ran with it after that.
I like it.
That's the whole story too. I don't really have any you know ill will against him. I think he's an incredible athlete, an incredible talent. I just think it's more between the ears than his athletic talent.
Yeah, well, we'll see how this plays out. I think he just would do better in the American League, and I think couldn't you see him just not having to worry about defense and hitting bombs out.
Let Will hit. Yeah, let Will hit.
I know.
Yeah, if you can get on a you know in a solid position without being jerked around to you know three different positions and can get solid at you know consistent at bats, and I think he'd thrive for sure.
Yeah. Well, hey man, thanks for coming on. You can follow John at Chill Myers on Twitter. Thanks for coming on the podcast, man. Maybe we'll check in with you later in the season, you know?
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. And you can follow the Kept Faith at the Kept Faith pod, or the Kept Faith at on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And we have a Patreon if anybody wants to join. It's patreon.com/thekeptfaith. Helps us out a lot. We'll be back next week. We have a guest coming in. So see you next week. Bye. Afraid of Cubs.
The Padres are
ball busters.
Well hit deep right at the fence. It is going in a goal.
Drive right center field, way back there, way back. They're near, going. It's gone.
Great play off balance, throw to first. They got him. The sensational play by Alan Wiggins.
2-0. High fly ball, well hit right field. Look out, Maldonado at the wall. Terry Kennedy, home run.
Drive to deep right field. If it's fair, the Padres will have the lead.
The show you just heard was part of the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. To hear other great shows like the Voice of San Diego Podcast, I Made It in San Diego, a show all about the people behind the region's businesses, the award-winning Culture Cast, The Kept Faith, a San Diego sports show, and more, please visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts. If you'd like to sponsor any of the podcasts, please email Aaron at voiceofsandiego.org. That's ERIN@VOSD.org.